on. And so that's the implicit backstory message of this entire presentation. So maybe President Obama thinks the critics in Congress will be like a hard cop and he's the soft cop and that can strengthen their hands in the negotiations with Iran. I don't think Iran will accept that.
Okay, gentlemen, just hold on to your thoughts. I want to go to our viewers now who have been taking part in this discussion as well through our social media pages. Let's listen to some of their comments and we'll be right back.
I, as a Canadian, am proud of Iran. You never intended to produce a bomb, but you had to convince all these countries. You have more in common with a lot of the West than Israel. Two thumbs up. Hypocrisy. Any country that has nuclear weapons has no right to tell others what they can and can't have. Want to impose your will on others? Rule by example. I love it when Israel is on the losing side. I think it will work if the U.S. stands on its promises. Good deal. Congrats from all my Pakistani brothers and sisters. Only terrorist Israel is angry. That is proof that it's a good deal. I'm a Sunni Muslim. I like Iran and I support it.
Just some of your comments as posted on our social media pages. I want to go now to Professor Serwer. Professor, if you allow me, I want to look at the track record of the U.S. when it comes to Iran, because, you know, certainly this issue of trust, this keyword of trust, keeps coming up by Iranian officials. You know, when we look at the 1981 Algiers Accords, for example, it clearly says point one is, in fact, non-intervention in Iranian affairs. Then we go to 2003 and 2002, when, in fact, President Rouhani himself was a nuclear negotiator himself. Nothing worked out then. In 2010, Turkey and Brazil negotiated that deal with Iran, which the U.S. had implicitly supported in the beginning, then rejected at the end. Can the U.S. be trusted?
Well, I would think that Iranians would feel about the U.S. the way the U.S. feels about Iran. And the way we feel is that we don't want to have to trust. We want to verify. And distrust and verify has been the motto of the Obama administration. And I would think it would be the motto of the Iranian administration as well. I think you have to understand, though, that there is no agreement on when sanctions will be lifted. And what that agreement will eventually be depends on negotiations that are going to occur over the next several months. I think if both countries enter in good faith, try to implement what's agreed, verify carefully that the implementation is being done properly, that the question of trust will fade in importance. Verification is terribly important.
Mr. Becker, how do you feel about that? Because, you know, another key phrase, of course, that Professor Serwer there mentioned is good faith.
Right. It's verification, I don't think, really is the issue, because the Iranian side is clearly allowed verification far beyond anything that any other country that's part of the IAEA actually allows. And certainly the United States doesn't allow it, and certainly Israel, which isn't part of the NPT and doesn't sign the IAEA agreement, it doesn't allow inspectors but has nuclear weapons. Israel would never do this. Iran has gone the extra mile. Now, I think the real danger here is that we could be back in the 2009 scenario, where the Iranians and the American government, the Obama administration, came to an agreement in principle in October 1st, 2009, about a nuclear path forward. And then all sorts of political pressures were applied on the Obama administration to rewrite the agreement. In other words, with the devil in the details started to emerge that were far different from the October 1st agreement. And then the Iranians backed away from it. And then the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton said, see, Obama, you can't trust Iran because it backed out of its agreement. I think the Iranian government is well aware of what happened in October 2009, where they were blamed for the failure of the talks. And they must be concerned now that since there's a two-step agreement, in the first step, the March 31st agreement was really an American demand and part of the American political scene, they came to an agreement in principle, but now there's going to be disagreements perhaps about key details, especially about economic sanctions and other matters. And if then Iran is forced to say that wasn't the agreement we signed in March 31st, the U.S. government and all of the anti-Iran lobby in America, including from the Israeli government, can then put the onus, the blame back on Iran. So the verification and trust issue is a matter of strategy, maneuver, and I think ultimately a matter of policy. And that's what I think the real concern is right now by the Iranian government. And that's why, based on what happened in 2009, the Iranian government's concerned about the unilateral release of this so-called fact sheet that they say does not represent the full agreement. Because if Obama goes down this road again, as he did in 2009, we're going to have a repeat performance, Scotch scrambled talks, but this time the prospect of what might come next would be considerably more serious.
Professor Serwer, do you think that President Obama will go down this previous road, which of course has failed?
Well, if there is a failure of the talks by the end of June, each side will seek to blame the other for that failure. There's no question in my mind about that. But it seems to me that the likelihood of success is rather high. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the constraints on the Iranian nuclear program provided for in the fact sheet, and the fact sheet is most of it's uncontested, are very serious constraints that should go a long way to satisfying reasonable people. They won't satisfy everybody in the United States. There will be criticism. There will be an attempt by Congress to have its say in this. That's all part of our political system, and something similar will be happening on the Iranian side. The Majlis will want to chime in, will want to examine this closely. I think we just have to, I would suggest we tighten our seatbelts. The next few months are going to be a bumpy road for this agreement, but I do have significant hope, based on the very real progress that has been made, that a substantial agreement can be reached that is satisfactory to both sides.
Mr. Becker, I saw you had a response. Go ahead.
If I could just jump in. See, the professor is drawing an equal sign. If the talks fail, Iran will blame the Americans, and the Americans will blame Iran, and both sides will blame each other. It'll be like the blame game. Okay, but one side has the ability, as demonstrated over the past years, to impose severe economic sanctions and try to rally public opinion against another side. Iran can be dictated to, the U.S. hopes, through the imposition of economic sanctions if the talks fail and Iran can be blamed. And Iran can't do the same to the United States, obviously. So it's not just a matter of an equivalent, both sides will blame each other. The question of blame for the breakdown of talks has extremely important political and economic and ultimately military implications. So I think what's happening right now, what we see with the agreement, is the American people don't want another war in the Middle East. The American people favor this agreement. The political opponents of President Obama in Congress don't just want, as the professor said, to have Congress have its say. They're trying to use Congress as a battering ram to destroy the agreement. They're saying with the Corker-Schumer bill, if it were to pass in mid or late April, says two things. Not only does Congress have the final approval over whatever the agreement is, but also that sanctions cannot be lifted for 60 days until that agreement is granted, meaning that the United States cannot begin the process of even step-by-step lifting of economic sanctions immediately upon agreement. That sabotages, on the American side, the ability of the American side to live up to its obligations, however one interprets them. The obligations that have been premised in the P5 plus one agreement. So the bill is designed not to have Congress have its say, it's designed to smash the agreement. And that's against the desire of the Iranian government, against the desire of the Iranian people, against the desire, I think, of President Obama, and against the desire of most of the
Mr.
American
Becker,
people.
Mr. Becker, I do apologize for interrupting you. We just have about 30 seconds left. I do apologize for interrupting you. I want to give the final comment then to Professor Serwer.
Sure.
Professor Serwer, I'd like to get your reaction to that. And obviously, obviously hone in on the military option, because even Ashton Carter, the defense secretary, did say right before this agreement came out, this agreement came out, that the military option was still open.
Well, it is still open, but it's not a very good option, and that's understood very well here. Iran has been anxious to say that sanctions have not affected its behavior. Well, then it shouldn't be worried about the ratcheting up of sanctions in the future if these negotiations fail. But that isn't really true, and I understand that it isn't true. It's important to get this agreement done, and it's important to get limits on the nuclear program and sanctions relief that is phased in a way that then ensures that the nuclear agreement is being implemented.
Okay, we'll leave it there at that. But gentlemen, we do appreciate both of your contributions to this edition of the debate. That was Mr. Brian Becker of the Answer Coalition, and he'd been speaking to us live from Washington. And we were, of course, joined by Professor Daniel Serber of Johns Hopkins University, and he had also been joining us live from Washington. And of course, viewers, we do appreciate your comments and, of course, watching. Until next time, good night.